All right, this is another episode of Inside Out. We're in Copenhagen. Who are you? Where are we? What's going on?
Hello, my name is Martin, and I'm working here in Composite at the product called C1.
Okay.
Lead program.
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Miguel, and I'm actually just product specialist here. So doing all external communication around our product and try to spread the word that all the great stuff's in there and what we can do. And
so I guess, then the obvious question is, what do you guys do? What's your specialty? And then we can talk about what your project.
Our product specializes in small to medium size web pages.
Okay.
So that would be some web pages that are out there that are being developed in somewhere around a week of development time up to 2 or 3 months. That's actually our main focus group. And there are a lot of web pages out there that are just being developed very rapidly. Mm. And the fun thing is that nowadays we're speaking a lot about these rich applications and web applications, and we want to bring the web 2.0, 3.0 in there. And the thing is that web developers keep stumbling over the same issues of how to get data, store data, have data in there. And that is actually our main focus, to like get rid of all of that plumbing code and just make them efficient.
Hmm.
So we try to do a system that from a developer and from a user and all of these different characters are just efficient. So we have to take a lot of all of this new technology, because when you get down to efficiency, you actually figure that, hey, you actually need to have all of that layering, architecture, software, technology. You just need to have that under control to do a nice, efficient app that runs greatly too and is done in the right architecture and all that stuff.
Sure.
So this is our main area, just trying to get that figured and making our developers as efficient as possible.
So in other words, you're writing essentially a tool suite, or a set of tools that developers can use to.
Yeah, from a developer point of view. But the thing is that it is actually what you would refer to as a content management system. Because if you take this to the other persons or personas in this scenario, there are way more than developers. There are users, there are content distributors, there are normal web editors, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And when the sum of all of that comes to a content management system, a web-based content management system.
Excellent.
So yeah, it's a tool suite. Yeah, there are some hardcore stuff in there, development-wise, but you have to have multiple more levels on it to get it there.
So, I mean, one of the reasons that we're here is because with the show Inside Out that we created a few years ago, we look at how real people in the real world actually build on top of our platform. And how it enables them to achieve their vision. So I guess the first question I would ask is, why did you choose to invest in the Microsoft platform in this specific case? And what does it give you? I mean, clearly you're writing in managed languages.
Yeah.
But that's really what I wanted to just ask the obvious question. So.
On the data layer, we use Blink
mm-hmm.
very much. And we really much like it.
Excellent. Eric will be happy to hear that. Cool.
That's a major cause why we use Microsoft, I think.
We actually rather want to show you, because that will just, the thing is that we have achieved a lot of things that are just until now has been totally undoable because of the amount of plumbing code that it took to do that, and wouldn't have any success because that you couldn't actually achieve this level of abstract for our coders as we wanted to have.
Okay.
So we rather just want to show you some examples on what this
Great.
Is, dig down and just see what we've done and how our take is on this higher level of abstraction.
That sounds good.
Cool.
Actually, Link gives our developers a neat way to get data out of our system.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to write huge amount of codes to take data out of the system.
Absolutely.
So.
And they can just program it as, objects and that sort of natural integration into their language,
yeah,
into,
exactly.
you know, into the vocabulary that they speak.
Exactly.
Interesting. Cool. Well, let's take a look at what you've done. I'm just going to turn the camera around. Probably easier for you to show what you're doing. I'll just come around and get it in focus. Channel 9's casual. This won't be edited out. This is happening in real time. Let me just try to get, you know, this. Great.
So, just want to show this. This is actually just a almost clean installation of our product. The fun thing is that this all runs in a browser. You can see that I'm choosing Firefox today. but okay. It tends to run JavaScript better. I don't know if that's allowed to be said.
Of
but
course it is.
The thing is that I want to dig down to this. Okay, a web developer has to create a piece of data. So if he has to create a piece of data, he would normally go to his SQL database, create a table, do some kind of probably SQL store procedure to grab data, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that is the problem that we want to face here. So what we can actually do in this system is we can go and take something like a global data type and actually just say, hey, I would like to have a new piece of data. Now this data actually comes up in a very .NET managed way and says, hey, I need a type name and I need a namespace. So we could just do something like product. We'll just call it product to be. And we'll just store this in namespace data and we'll call the title product. Now, on this piece of data, I get to describe two services, a recycle bin and a hash published bin. We'll get into that later because that is actually very interesting services and ways and stuff that we can do with that. But we'll just take the simple model first. Now, after I've described my overall names for this class, then I'll actually go and do some fields on it. I can just go say, hey, I would like to add a field. Product should probably have a name field. You have a label called name. And you'll actually see that now I'm actually specifying some help stuff, additional stuff. This is actually something that's very user-like. The product name. Sorry, name. And then I can go and define some stuff that's actually very DB-like. I can say that, hey, this should be a field type string. It should have a maximum length of 64 characters. Optional, no validation rules. Some very overall description of this. More than that, I can actually do some presentation definition, saying that, hey, this should be defined as a text box, should be positioned last. Some overall structure of this data, some of it actually being actually class-like, some of it being data storage-like, and some of it being presentation-like. So I'll just add a couple of more fields, just call this description, just jump. Description. Now that probably needs a longer string than 64 characters. We'll just let that be unlimited. And the last thing I need for a good product database is price. And the price should be a decimal number with two decimals. That seems fine. So what I'll go and do now is I'll hit save. And behind the screens, the computer is actually doing a lot of stuff for us now. It is actually building the types, it's doing data stuff, making sure that we can new up this data storage. Mm-hmm. So what I can actually go and do now is I can actually take this product and I can actually go and add instances of it. Say that, hey, I would like to have a product name. Hey, I'll just call that Composite C1 description. Is great, and it has a price. So now I can actually save this instance of a product, and you can see in my system that, hey, now I actually have this instance of this product. Very much like other systems actually have done this for a lot of years. Actually, we see other systems that can do that. So there isn't really anything revolutionary in this. But let's have a look at what really happened underneath the scenes, because that's what's interesting. Cool. So what I actually have now is I right here have a Visual Studio project where on my I actually newed up this website. Now I just have to go and restart the web server. I'll just flip the application domain of this server. And you'll get the story on why later. But that is actually one of the areas where we're looking very much into all the DLR stuff and actually trying to get all of that stuff in there, because that could actually do that. We didn't have to restart the web server here. So what I'll just do, I'll take my web page here and I'll just add a new item and see if we can find a web form. We'll just call it default 2, that's okay, and hit add. So I now have my default 2 page here, and if I go to page loaded now, I can actually go and say, hey, data, as I just defined my data right before in namespace, I now have a data product. So as you can see, data product is actually an interface and not a class, as I mentioned earlier. And so we have a piece of product here that's called P, and we'll see that, hey, this is a fully managed interface. So it's got all of the stuff in there, name, price, description, as we specified earlier. So we actually got this interface rendered. It has some additional stuff, data source ID, but that's actually just stuff that the system needs to survive. So what we actually have is we've now created this interface, and that in itself isn't really that special, because you would be able to do that just by writing it by hand. We didn't do any magic at all. But the whole thing is that this interface is usable on a central data facade in this system, meaning that we can go to our namespace composer.data and actually grab this data facade. Data facade. Now, this is our link implementation of our data providers. And the cool thing is that instead of link to SQL or link to XML or something like that, where you actually go and reflect upon a database, this actually works the other way around. So you can actually take the data facade and say, hey, give me some data that is of type, where type has to derive from iData, and you'll find that a product derives from iData. So I can actually now go and say data.product. And that will return me an iCurable of data product. So this is actually my access point towards my data. And I haven't coded anything at all to get this. I've just created this interface from the administration window. Now, that is actually just pretty simple. Anyone who has like access skills or something like that can actually go and do manage code here and run that towards our data facade and yet get correct coded data storage.
Yeah, this was what I was talking about. Make it easier for our developers to get data out of the system.
Excellent.
Yeah. Cool. So they can design the type in the administrated module. Mikkel showed you, and then they can go and write something like that and get data out of the system. Not even think about SQL or anything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I've just shown you this data product. So let's just go and do a go to definition on this product. Let's see what the system actually created. So if we like take aside all of the the attributes here, we actually see that this is just a public interface product that derived from iData, which was our interface that you needed to derive from to be able to be stored in our data facade. Other than that, it's just a string description, a ID that's called a GUID ID, string name, and this decimal price. So it's pretty much the structure we want to have in there. But since the first thing that actually exists when you add a data store in our system is actually the interface. So there is no create table script. So we need to have like additional information for us to create the right table. So what we do is we actually add some extra properties here. And you can see us adding stuff like saying, hey, this description, it needs to be of a store field type physical large string. And you can say you're setting it a name as a string that is 64 characters long. So we actually moved that description of the specific storage up to the interface. And that is actually messing up the interface a bit. But yeah, because now you have relational store data in there and you'll see us have field ID. But we actually gain a whole lot when we do so. It gives us so many other possibilities. So, and that's actually quite fun. So yeah. let's just hit back here. And what you'll see is that this data facade, if we just get another line here. Sorry. That thumbs. You'll see that, yeah, we've got like get data that returned an enumerable. We also have got like delete data, build data, add data, all of that stuff that just makes your daily data managing doable, update stuff. Whatever you need in there, you've got accessors for it.
Excellent.
And so we actually sat at this point where, hey, we got the system where we actually abstracted the storage fully away and didn't actually lose that many richness skills. We were actually able to define almost the same stuff as we can do in SQL Data Store. So that actually gives us a lot of possibilities that we have this fully abstract data layer. Mike, do you want to draw just the overall what you can actually do with this system system architecture wise?
Sure.
That is actually very very interesting.
So we have the data facade here. And behind the scenes, we have several data providers. One for SQL, and we have one for and several others. And you can go here, see, get data, use product. It's the data facade, and it returns an iQL. And behind the scenes, I haven't a lot of things. Actually, product can exist both in SQL and XML. And the data facade will transfer the calls to both places.
Excellent.
In the SQL thing, we have an iQL one that do the translation from the interface here to data entities on the SQL to link.
Nice.
To SQL.
Yeah.
And we have a small iQL group down here that do the same translation from X element to the interface over there. And what happens in the data facade is that we have an iQL over here that checks to see if where does this product interface exist. Here and maybe here. So what it does is, if we just do this, it will go over here and do an SQL query, mm-hmm. get the products back, and do the same thing in here, and return it all as an iQL. So when you start enumerate, you first get elements from here, and then you get the elements from here. But where it gets interesting if is where you do something like joins or,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. Then the data service will actually check if you join something where it only exists on the SQL. If you join product with some other type, and both types exist on the SQL, then it will translate that so it will be join on the SQL database.
Mm-hmm.
But if we join product with something else that only exists on the XML, it will put this into memory and do a join in memory. So over here you will not have to worry about where data exists.
Sure.
Just write your link queries and the data slot.
With the data execution, yeah.
Very cool.
And for example, if you do a count over here, if you do a count here, and a mm-hmm. count here, and sort of numbers here. So you would get the performance of SQLite Link, linked to SQL. And I still have the abstraction layer you get over here.
Very nice. And you deal with the type matching, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, the SQL types, and those are things I don't have to worry about. It's abstracted away from me in that layer right there.
Yeah. In here we have a translation from the expression tree you get over here.
Nice.
To the right expression tree you have to deliver to the table in the data context.
Excellent. Very cool use of Link.
Yeah.
Very nice. Now, what about performance in your big layer there? Can you talk about that?
Well, there is some translation here. So obviously, it takes some time, but in huge amount of data, you get the performance out of the SQL.
Sure.
Especially when you.
But in the case of XML, that's going to be up to the middle layer there to deal with parsing and searching and.
Yeah, exactly.
So you use system.xml.
Yeah.
Or you could use link to XML.
We use
of course.
XML on this side.
Yeah.
Here. Small translation.
So, excellent. Yeah, definitely performance-wise, it's always the issue. If you're running multiple providers and you're querying against both of them, let's face it, your model is screwed performance-wise because everything has to go in and get to get out there. So that is really a bad situation. But it's durable, and the developer really doesn't have to think over it. And if you actually think of it, all of the code that the developer is writing is toward our data facade and not towards the implementation. So you can actually, with the flip of a bit, change your data store from XML to SQL. So you can actually play around with where you actually want to have this data stored. Because let's face it, sometimes XML is actually faster than SQL. If you can get to like have all your data in memory and you don't change it that often, then it actually just goes faster than having it directly on the web server than having to contact the SQL layer. So
absolutely.
There are actually pros and cons with both the XML and the SQL provider. And you should use whatever provider fits your target best. So
now, I didn't see in your code example where, the developer was actually specifying a provider. Like, you didn't specify a provider in your example.
That's because we take the abstraction up even more and saying, hey, when you knew of a system, then you by default have a provider in there that is just able to take any unknown type and just create a data store for it. So that's actually one of the things that we didn't discuss. You can actually sit down and code this interface just in hand. You don't have to use the interface manager or control thing in the web tool. You can actually just write the interface by hand. And the first time you use this interface on the data facade, it'll say, hey, are you doing a at data? Oh, I don't have any data store for this. So I'll just go create one on this default provider. And that will turn out to be a XML file or a SQL table. So it actually runs seamlessly, and you just have to have one of these providers. You can change the data store afterwards if you want to.
Excellent.
This is like what we came down with our first take.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've been like in this scenario for a couple of years, we actually started out building this on the first Link CTP.
Nice.
So we've been through all the CTPs with this, and when you've been here for some time, then you actually get to, okay, we can do more stuff on top of this than just abstracting away our data providers. And one of the things of this is actually when we saw the web administration window, I actually fairly quickly just jumped over these services.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see the services, this was has a recycle bin. Or has publication or publishing. And these are actually very, very common needs for data in the web business. Of course, recycle bin function is kind of out there for all data that you want to be able to delete it and get into recycle bin and undelete it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cool thing with this architecture is that we can provide this as a single-click service. And since we are on a web-based platform, a lot of our content needs to have a published flow on it. So someone creates this data and another one has to approve it before it can actually go to the actual web page. So we have this publishing flow in also. So let's just draw that those publishing services on top of this, because this is actually very interesting things. So, yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah, behind the scenes, Graphic Hacks has two databases or tables.
Actually, I want to start up. Okay, the only thing that differs in an interface that has a recycle bin, for instance, is that it has yet another attribute saying, hey, I need to have a recycle bin. Okay. So that's the only difference.
Actually, it's an interface.
So it's an interface it derived from. Mm-hmm. But that's actually it. So you can in a single line define that, hey, I need this recycle.
Excellent.
That's the code. Oh, you didn't make it.
No, I didn't make it.
It would be an interface up here.
Okay.
So just...
Nice.
Yeah. So just implement another interface.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that we can take this as a service and just do remove all that plumbing code from the user and just give him that single interface. He must not implement anything other than that.
We try to make it easy for the user. So we. When the user wants to get data from another scope,
mm-hmm.
he writes.
Let's see, want to fetch it from the recycle bay. We should probably use using statements to make it easier.
So he will write something like this.
Oh, I didn't let him in.
So this statement specifies that the data he wishes to get is from the deleted items.
Okay.
So from now on, inside this scope, all data will be fetched from the deleted items scope.
Okay.
And not from the administrated or public scope.
Excellent.
So again, easy writing for the developer to get data from there. One scope he wishes.
Very nice.
So let's just see the implementation of that. Yeah.
What happens is that the SQL data writer can check the value of the current scope and see if it's deleted. So it will use the right table when fetching data from the query. So it happens in the SQL or in the data prior.
Cool.
And the same, the HTML just uses different files.
And you don't really care what the provider, the store is. It just has to be structured data.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly. It doesn't really matter. It could be a comma separated list, be a hash table, could be any number of things, dictionary.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Actually, the provider is an enterprise library plugin, so you can just go and implement the interface needed for being a data provider and you can hook in to the system.
Cool. So, what's your experience been like? Talk about the experience of developing this system.
Oh, it's we had a lot of kick out of it when actually we started up, as I mentioned earlier, with the first CTP of this. We were just like, for the first time we could actually create this vision or this software that we actually had in our vision. And that was actually very, very interesting for us to get that power from the link stuff. Now you can see that we added a lot of stuff on top of that.
Sure.
We take it even further than that, where the stuff that we curate towards our data facade isn't actually relational stuff more, then it actually turns out to be files Why not just query all your files against this data facade also? So we actually came up to this total abstract level of, yeah, we can actually query anything in the system towards this. So
yeah,
it has...
It's basically like the expression trees, I think. Mm-hmm. Gives you a lot of power in doing queries dynamically.
Yeah.
Really, I like the start button on your forehead.
Yeah, you're cool. Actually sitting in the screen, so you've got this mega tattooed Windows.
That's great. It's really into Windows.
Dedicated.
And you are actually running Vista. Very nice.
Yeah, of course. We're officially Microsoft Guinea Pigs. We've everything that's out there with the CTP label. We dig into it. That's
excellent.
We cannot keep our hands off it. So.
And so it looks like from your code. Developers aren't actually explicitly writing link queries. So when I want to say, so what does it look like when I want to grab data from your example right here? So select
so,
from, you know what I'm saying? What does it look like?
We'll type something like this. From data.
Yeah, there we go.
So this get data returned an iGrabble, and you can mm-hmm. say where data dot you got all your
sure.
properties mm-hmm. name composite.
I think equals one sign, one equals right. It booing. Yeah. Okay. No, that's
yeah.
right. Great.
Select dot price.
Nice.
Yeah, the ugliest thing about that sentence was actually us not using using statements.
Yeah.
So that was actually why the first part of it is so long. But yeah, you go and use the full extent of link. Now there are some even funnier examples here where we actually take and do mixed interfaces. We have something. In the web business, a lot of times we're actually we're playing around with media files, right?
Sure.
And what media file is like? It's like a regular file, but it's probably a picture or a flash element or something like that. And you actually need some attributes from this element, like height, width, name of it, stuff like that, to actually be able to use this at the abstract level that you actually want to. So we actually have some fun implementations of that, because one of the core implementations in the system is actually one of these curable files
mm-hmm.
is actually a curable against the file system. So we can actually go and say, hey, I would love to have an I file that has this name, and you will actually see that, hey, in the system is actually this composite data dot types here, where I can actually go and say iFile. And this is actually also a derivative from iData. So I can use this on my data facade, just as I could use products. Sorry, there. So now I can actually go and say, hey, give me a, I'm lazy here, so give me a curable towards this data provider. So now I actually have var files here. So on top of that, I could actually go and say, hey, give me a file were from fn files where f.file name equals web.config. So that actually
nice.
Gives us a very, very abstract way for actually getting to that level of data also. Now, in the system is actually if you saw the list of properties on files, it actually had data source, file name, folder path. Now, that's pretty much just the basic stuff for a file. But when we talk about something like rich media, like the media files or
sure.
flash movies, stuff like that, you actually needed additional data for it to be a object that is actually usable. So there are interfaces that derives from iFile. One of them is iMediaFile, which is actually a pretty interesting implementation because it's actually a joining of these interfaces. So let's just take that to the screen because that is actually a very interesting way of doing this.
So we have this media file data provider, and it delivers object that implements iMediaFile. And it has a series of properties, and the media file provider actually uses the data state to keep some of these properties, metadata about the media file, title or anything like that that should be shown on the web page. And besides that, we have another mechanism, a stream provider. So any iFile in the system, you can write get stream, you can read and write to, and the media file provider populates objects of this type with the media information so that the stream provider down here can deliver streams.
Nice.
So you can do a microbial, get iFiles out, and then start reading and writing to them.
Excellent, man.
So yeah, the weird thing is that some of these implementation of data stores or virtual data stores actually runs on top of the data store itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you flip from a SQL to XML provider, all of this additional data will go to that data store. So we actually try to just bring up all of these abstract layers so that our developers actually just have to write this interface and know the data for sale. Being able to use our interfaces,
mm-hmm.
and if they use them on our data for safe, they can actually get all of that data as well. How do I have to go to file system normally, or what if I want to join with something? They can actually go and write those queries just towards the data for safe. So if you want to have a file specific to something or getting it, you can actually get the file stream directly from a link query.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually, yeah, gives us some probabilities that we haven't seen anyone out there or else having.
Cool.
And that's fun.
Absolutely.
And the feedback from developers seeing this, they're just okay. Some of them are just so deeply in love with just the data storage facilities that they actually forget about the other system until they actually have to produce these websites and just go, okay, this I can do this, and now I can get all this plumbing code for free. Because let's face it, all of this is actually just data storage plumbing code. Now it's done at a level where if you have, like, as we mentioned earlier, this, yeah, something like a half month to 2 month implementation time of a web page, you can't go and write all of this code. It took us years to do so. And the cool thing is that the skill set that it takes to get into this data storage framework is actually just link, and then knowing how our interfaces are, then you can actually write it by hand. You don't have to use anything else, and that is wicked that we can take it up to that abstraction layer. And just that's what you need to know. Go do it. And
that's
a lot of the properties that you saw in the interface, they were actually optional,
yeah.
So you can actually leave them out. So you could pretty much just take a normal interface derived from iData and run it towards this.
Excellent.
So That is definitely what the link platform and the 3.5 framework has given us, the skill set to just give so much power to our end developers, and them definitely not needing to care about how or why or what is happening.
Mm.
And all of these overall questions about data storage, we can actually leave this to the guys that run the server farms or whatever. Now, I just love being able to do a website and just run it on my flat laptop on XML files,
mm-hmm.
and then take that exact same site and just run it towards a high-end SQL data store the day afterwards, and I didn't have to rewrite a single line.
Well, that leads to a question. I mean, if you already have an existing SQL database, for example, that has, you know, various databases and pretty complex table architecture, you can't just, I mean, something has to run.
Yeah, you can.
So that you can understand what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have tools?
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, porting tools, stuff like that. Now, if you take this model, one of the worst things you can do towards this model is saying, hey, I already got my SQL out there. It's in the data store. I just want to use your product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would actually be a pure hell because, yeah, our interface goes and do this towards all of these data crusades. So you can't actually use this notion of providers that we came with. You can export your data, implement it into, but that would be kind of the hardware.
Actually,
but
you can map to existing tables.
Exactly, and that's so you actually just get into another model.
Yeah, you can say this property on this interface should map onto this column on this table, and so forth. So if you have an existing table where you have enough data to represent a product, then you can just do a mapping and plug it into the system, and you can start getting products out of the
excellent. Well, remember that tool that was written, we talked about on Channel 9 a couple years ago. I believe it was called Blink.
Okay. I don't know what
it was called. I can't remember what it was called. It was a woman, one of the rare female developers at Microsoft and pretty much in the industry, but she's a superstar. I can't remember what if it was actually called Blink, but that is a tool that you just point at any SQL server, and it will generate everything you need to write link queries against it.
And Reflex.
Yes.
Cool.
So it was a really cool tool. I don't know whatever became of that, and I'm sorry to everybody out there that I forgot, but it was 2 years ago. There have been a lot of interviews since then. But anyway, you know, I just wanted to bring that up. So you run a tool, and then you merge that data into some pattern that makes sense in this context.
But exactly. But that's actually one of the unique things or different things about this product. All the stuff that we've seen with Link actually takes whatever data store you've got and do a Link implementation on top of that.
Mm.
Now, we've kind of like switched that around and say, hey, we want to go from managed code and just see how far we can get the data layer to behave in the correct way for that .NET item.
Sure.
So that's actually what mainly differs in our model. And yeah, it doesn't. If you have your own data store or your own scenario, it is, as Martin said, yeah, these providers, they're part of the
enterprise.
Yeah, exactly, enterprise libraries. So it's pretty easy to go and write your own provider if you want to have it in there. It's not even composite specific knowledge.
Mm.
Let's face it, we're a smaller company, even though we're growing rapidly.
Sure, good.
But we still need to like base our stuff on proven technology and definitely the enterprise framework, which is in a lot of the stuff in the system, has helped us just minimizing that level of plumbing code that we had to do to get this system running, because we've been through some hard coding tasks here and we've been faced with just as much plumbing code as anyone else needed to go through to code something like that. And the enterprise framework has been a great help here.
Excellent.
A lot. We've already have our eyes on a lot of the new .NET 4.0 features that will actually help us even more in this way. So that we're looking just very much forward to
get
the
BBC your hands on
and getting our hands on it and starting getting to code with that, because that will just make some of mostly actually internal stuff. Well, it'll just make it so much easier.
Good.
So, yeah, definitely.
Great, you guys. This is very, very interesting stuff. It's nice to see Link being used to this level.
This is just one of the yes. We run out. Yeah, a lot. Actually, we use like almost all of the new JetNet technologies, and somewhere in different areas of the system, we've got stuff where you can go and draw up workflows that will actually become web interfaces and stuff like that. But yeah, actually, the thing of software is just when you have to try to keep ahead, you just have to embrace these new technologies as early as possible to get them in there. And we've got developers who's actually using our tools, and their requirements is just the same as ours. They want to have the new .NET framework when it's mm-hmm. out there, and so we have to embrace all these new technologies as a
sure.
high level to keep them satisfied.
The cool thing is, especially with when you think about Link, which is implemented inside of a static language like C sharp. I mean, they need to add functional constructs, and Eric Meyer and Anders, of course, were key behind that. But what I was going to say is, when that happens, you really don't. It's a new technology, but it's not really a new vocabulary. I mean, it's a slightly different way of thinking, but you get to use Visual Studio. You get to use a language you're comfortable with. Because sometimes people talk about, why are you making C# such a large language and you're adding all these features to it? Well, it's because then you don't have to spend time in another language, maybe in another IDE, to get a feature that you need for your system. And you could write your system in any number of languages, managed languages anyway. Or unmanaged if you're crazy, or native. You could do it in native. It'd probably take a little longer.
You just heard people there.
No offense to my native brothers. This is great. I mean, again, it's great to see people innovating on top of our platform as opposed to just having Microsoft always talk about it on Channel 9. This is great to have you guys. That's why I haven't said much. I don't need to say anything.
Okay.
Anyway, so we'll end here.
Yeah.
But before we do that, one of the things I do in Inside Out and on Channel 9 interviews in general is never end when I say I'm going to end. But I wanted to ask you, what's some feedback for Microsoft, for the teams? Do you have any?
Oh.
Do you have any questions, any feedback you want to aim at the, just look into the camera and ask the C# team or Eric or Anders? I know, that's awful.
We just been like Rhythm 2 weeks ago and just fired up all that shit. But one of the main things that we just want to have in there is just workflow foundation. It's cool,
mm-hmm.
but it's damn slow.
Okay.
It's performance wise when you get a lot of stuff in there. It just runs slower when your product scales. Mm-hmm. Now,
get work on that.
We already discussed that with the team, but that is actually our main concern right now with the platform. So
perfect.
We want to be able to push it out to our developers also,
uh-huh.
but when it runs that slow, it's a problem.
Sure.
But yeah, they know it. We already talked to them.
Good.
And we're facing that problem in a joint venture. So.
Excellent.
So.
Well, great work, you guys. Very impressive. Thanks for having us here today.
Cool.
I really appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you.